kind of recovering from that introduction. Wow. Wow, I feel the love. But I'm still recovering, so I'm going to invite you to take some deep cleansing breaths with me. Will you breathe with me? Let's breathe in together. And exhale out. Let's do it again. Breathing in and letting go. And I'd like to do that one more time. Breathing in and exhaling out. You see, the key to life is in the breath. Everything that you need in order to master and to live this thing called life is in the breath. When we inhale, we receive. We are literally receiving the gift of life as the breath. When we're navigating through life, it can feel like it's difficult for whatever reason for us to receive. And yet we're born knowing how to receive because we do it all the time, automatically, whether we're thinking or not, we are receiving. So I invite you to claim, I know how to receive. I know how to accept my good because I accept it every moment when I breathe in. I am literally receiving the gift of life. And then we exhale. When we exhale, we surrender, we let go. We move our bloated nothingness out of the way to create space for more receiving. We know how to do this thing called life. We were given that ability when we were born. The title of my talk today is Open at the Top, Consciously Courting the Divine. And I'd like to start at the beginning, at least the beginning for me. When I came into this teaching, I was excited because the notion that I could change my thinking and I could change my life, I was like, yeah, I want some of that. And I was excited about being part of a community and having a philosophy that would support me in doing just that, mastering materiality, mastering my own mind. And you know, that's a good place to start. And it was the place that I started. I suspect that it's the place that many of us started. Change your thinking, change your life. And I came in with the attitude, just tell me what to do. Just tell me what to do and I'll do it because I'm ready. I've been ready. I'm over ready. How come I didn't find this philosophy sooner? So just tell me what to do and I'll do it. And I did. But here's the thing. This idea of being open at the top, this is a charge that Ernest Holmes, our founder, gave us. He said, this is my revelation, this teaching, not yours. It must always remain open at the top for new insights, for fresh ideas. What he was saying is that we must have our own relationship with these teachings. This is not a philosophy where you have to rely upon other people indefinitely in order to have a relationship with God, in order to change your life. It's change your thinking, change your life. That's the gift, that's the beauty of this teaching, is that we can download our own insights. We have the ability to have our own connection with spirit. As Karen said, we are all practitioners, all of us. So she had the practitioners who are licensed stand. But if you're in this room, you're a practitioner. Because this is a philosophy in which we practice. We are given tools, we are given principles so that we can practice this teaching and use it, have our own intimate relationship with it. So we are all practitioners. For this to happen, we must be open. We must be open at the top. We must be willing to receive. My job as a practitioner, and for the practitioners who stood, our job is to show you how to be your own healer. That's what we do. We stand in the gap for you until you can stand in truth for yourself. So ultimately, our job is to work our way out of a job. And so I ask you, are there any preconceived ideas that you have about who you are and what your life can be that's limiting your expression of life? Yeah? So I want to talk about some people who I know you've heard of. And I want to talk about some preconceived ideas that people had of them, opinions that other people had. Because there's a difference between an opinion, a fact, and the truth. Okay? And a lot of us go through life, I know I did, and I'm constantly staying open at the top so that I stay out of that where I'm allowing opinions and facts to be my truth. Because when something is your truth, it governs your life. It guides your life. It runs your life. For example, people will say, and I've said it, diabetes runs in my family. Okay? Heart disease runs in my family. Breast cancer runs in my family. Just because it runs in your family doesn't mean it has to run your life. And you could be the change. We don't believe in generational curses in this philosophy. We believe that you can change your thinking and change your life, and that everyone that you come in contact with, because of how you've been lifted up, has the possibility and the potentiality to have their own relationship with that which is working for you. So let's talk about Thomas Edison. Teachers told him he was too stupid to learn anything. Edison also famously invented 1,000 light bulbs before creating the one that worked. Then there was Walt Disney. He was fired by a newspaper editor because he lacked imagination and had no good ideas. Several of his businesses failed before the premiere of the movie Snow White. Today, most childhoods wouldn't be the same without his ideas. Then there's Albert Einstein. He didn't speak until the age of 4 and didn't read until the age of 7. His teachers labeled him slow and mentally handicapped, but Einstein just had a different way of thinking. He later won the Nobel Prize in Physics. Charles Darwin was considered an average student. He gave up a career in medicine and was going to school to become a parson. But as Darwin studied nature, he found his calling. Have you ever heard of someone called Lucille Ball? Yes. She spent many years on the B list, and her agent told her to pursue a new career. Then she got her big break on I Love Lucy, and what I'd like to add is that she wasn't just an actress. She was a producer, she was a director, that she, with the show I Love Lucy, developed a way of filming television that revolutionized how we saw television shows. She was a genius in her own right, a comedian and a genius of all things. And then there's Sidney Poitier. At his first audition, the casting director instructed him to stop wasting everyone's time and go be a dishwasher or something. He went on to win an Academy Award and is admired by actors everywhere. And then there's Oprah Winfrey. She was fired from her television reporting job because they told her she wasn't fit to be on the screen. But Winfrey rebounded and became the undisputed queen of television talk shows, and she's also a billionaire. And then there's Fred Astaire. His first screen test, the judges wrote, can't act, can't sing, slightly bald, can dance a little. Astaire went on to become one of the most famous dancers of all time. Lastly, there's Stephen King, who was initially so frustrated with his first novel, Carrie, that he threw it in the trash. His wife found the manuscript in the trash and took it out. To date, his 49 novels have sold 350 million copies worldwide. And then there's me. When I was a child, I was a decent student, a good student. But when I would get my report card, you know how they put your grades? I don't know how they do it now, but back in the day, it was handwritten. And they would write down my grades for all the classes I took. And then they would have a place for notes. And they'd say, Rachel, that's my birth name. Rachel's a lovely child. However, she talks too much. She's always trying to engage her classmates in conversation when they're supposed to be silently reading or working at their desks. Now, that's an opinion. I would even go so far as to say it was a fact, because I was talking when I was supposed to be doing something else. But the truth about me is I was born to talk. And now I do it as my living. So just because something is a fact doesn't mean that it's really the truth about you. Maybe there's a way for you to utilize that you're doing and being in a way that actually propels you forward. So this is why it's so important for us to have our own relationship with the divine. That phrase from the title of my talk, Consciously Courting Divine, that's in Ernest Holmes' charge, just like we must be open at the top. He charged us to consciously court the divine, to have our own relationship with the inner wisdom. Your soul is speaking. Are you listening? Our soul is that part of us that is the absolute, that is the thing itself. And the beauty of it is that our connection to spirit was placed in a location where we can easily find it. We don't have to go out searching for it, seeking it, looking for it from anyone. It's within. It's always within. It's as close to us as our breath. We breathe in and we recognize that we receive. And as easily as we receive the gift of life, we can receive insight. We can receive revelation. We can receive ideas. That's what I love about visioning, this process that means everything to me. Because when I discovered visioning, I was someone who had used this philosophy to develop and cultivate a life that I had prayed for, that I had placed on treasure maps and vision boards, and it had manifested. And yet there was an aspect of me that was still unfulfilled, because we will not find meaning and fulfillment in the things of this world. They might make life more comfortable, and I'm all for comfort, but true meaning is not of this world. It is that divine impulse. It is that divine connection to spirit. And it is so important that we are willing to cultivate that. Eric Butterworth said, God is in the express business. Ernest Holmes, I don't have the exact phrasing in my mind in the moment, but the idea that he was articulating is that God, spirit, whatever you call the creator, has this irresistible urge to express itself. Said another way, God is in the express business. And God's irresistible urge to express manifested as me and you and each and every one of us. And what I love about visioning is it's an opportunity to step out of the acquisition of things and to ask the deeper questions. The questions like, who did I come here to be? Who did I come here to be? What is my deepest truth? It is when we ask those questions that we find meaning and purpose in life, and we also find direction. And those things that we're trying to work out and figure out, I remember there was this job that I was trying so hard to manifest. And it's a long story, and that's a story for another time, but the gist of it is that I had this idea that there was only one way for me to get into a field that I wanted to get into, which at the time was community relations. And I had found this job, and it was an entry-level position. It was making half of what I was making, and I was already struggling, but I thought I had to take this job. If they offered it to me, it was the only way I was going to get into this field. Well, they didn't offer it to me. And I was devastated. I was devastated. I got a phone call asking if I would take a temp job. And everything I said that I didn't want to do, I didn't want to commute really far. I didn't want to work in human resources. And I didn't want to be an admin assistant anymore. And this job was all of those things. But because I had been praying and meditating, something said, say yes. So I did. And what I didn't know is that the person that I worked for had a reputation for being very difficult. But I didn't know that because I was in this teaching. And I loved everybody. And so we got along. And people were like, oh my gosh, he gets along with so-and-so. And they liked me so much, and they wanted to keep me. And he actually wanted to hire me. And I said, you know, I really want to get into community relations. And he said, well, guess what? I know somebody who works in that department for this sports team. Maybe I can make a connection. So I thought I was really in now, and I still didn't get the job. But unbeknownst to me, the community relations department for this company happened to be in human resources. And the person who that was her job was going on maternity leave. And when she went on maternity leave, they asked me to do her job. So I thought, well, I'll get some experience. And when she came back, she wanted to work part-time. And the job was full-time. So I had to let go of my idea of how it was gonna happen and allow it to happen. And I'd been on that job for a while, and then I realized that there was something more that was yearning to express. And so I had to be willing to be in the question, because life had become a struggle. Because I felt this sense of unworthiness, that I was always doing so much to try to keep up, always afraid that they were gonna figure out that I didn't know what I was doing, and that I wasn't good enough for this job. So I was constantly working overtime, trying to keep up. And so I had to let go and realize that there was something calling me that had nothing to do with community relations. A job that I loved for a period of time, but there was something more. And there were several steps that I took, but eventually I got the courage to take the big leap and become a full-time practitioner. And I've been a full-time practitioner for 17 years. This is how I make my living. I'm an entrepreneur. I'm in ministry. And I had to cultivate a way of knowing. And there are things that I know how to do that I've never been trained to do. I've never read a book because I consciously court the divine. This is what I know. As I start to wrap up here, that anyone who is operating at the level of genius, mastery, invention, innovation, they are tapping into something greater than themselves. They are connected to those divine ideas. I love hearing people talk about how they became great. I bet if I had the opportunity to interview any of the people who I talked about, that there would be some element of them talking about them consciously courting the divine. Now, they may not use that terminology, but they have a relationship with that which is greater than them. Stevie Wonder talks about how the music comes to him, and he simply writes down what he hears. Artists talk about how they simply create what they see. Inventors have an ability to see what we don't see and to hear what we don't hear, because they're tapped in to that greatness. Their soul speaks and they listen. I've heard it said that Michael Jackson used to stay up really, really late and keep odd hours writing music. And I've heard that's true for many musicians and artists. Like, once the muse comes to you, you're just in it and you lose time and space. And someone said, why do you keep such odd hours? And he said, because that's when I get my inspiration. And they said, well, can you get your inspiration some other time? And he said, maybe, but I don't know. He said, if I'm not awake to get that song, then God's going to give it to Prince. The idea there is not to plant any seeds of fear in us. It's about being willing at all times to consciously court the divine. And that's what visioning does. And so I'd like to extend a personal invitation to you to join us this afternoon. Because the best way that I know how to describe what visioning is to allow you to experience it, allow you to practice it, to have the experience supported by all those who are present, to get quiet and to get still and to ask the question, what is the highest vision for my life? Beyond the things that you want to manifest in health and relationships and money and career, is there a higher purpose? It might make the things that you're praying for that you haven't yet manifested obsolete, because your soul is yearning to move in another direction. It isn't until we listen and be quiet that we're able to tune into that guidance. The last thing I'd like to say is what I love about visioning is that it's not a one-night stand, okay? Our relationship with God isn't meant to be a one-night stand or a series of one-night stands where we contact God when we have a need. It's about having an ongoing relationship that we nurture and that we cultivate. And it doesn't have to be hard. It's simple. It may not be easy, but it doesn't have to be hard. We know how to vision. We know how to have God's thoughts. Emerson said, I want to know God's thoughts. We have the ability to do that. Remember, I began with the breath. We're going to end with the breath. And this time, when you inhale and exhale, I want you to be aware that you know how to receive anything that you need in order to go to the next level of expression. And when you exhale, I want you to be aware that you are opening yourself up. You are creating a space for more of that goodness to come into your body, to come into your mind, to come into your heart, to have life as your life. So let's breathe together. Let's breathe in and then exhale out. Let's do that again, breathing in and exhaling out. And one more time, we are going to receive and we are going to surrender. Namaste. So now it's time to pray. And I'd like to invite the practitioners here to please stand, to stand with me, to surround this community. If you put a prayer in the prayer box, the answer is yes. If you have a prayer on your heart that didn't make it to the prayer box, the answer is yes. Let us anchor that yes with this spiritual mind treatment. How good it is to speak this word, to know and to know that we know that there is only one life, one power, one presence. It is the life, the power, the presence of the Most High, and all that it is, I am. I am a divine expression of all that Spirit is. The love of God is love in me. The mind of God is minding me. The power of God is the power that I use. The presence of God is the presence that expresses itself as me. And as I know this truth about myself, I declare this truth for each person who is gathered here. We are all practitioners, and I declare that we are a united state of consciousness. We are here experiencing this thing called life by divine appointment, and that we have everything that we need in order to live our best life. And I declare that there is a greater willingness to say yes to this, to say yes to life. Oh, how good it is to feel the shift that is taking place right here, right now. I give thanks for our willingness to own our own divinity, to embrace our wholeness, to step out of where we are, any smallness that we have accepted, and to embrace a higher truth, a deeper truth of our life, and to live it. And if there is a prayer on the heart, in the mind, on the prayer box, some area of life in which we are claiming a shift for us or for anyone who we love, who we care for, the answer is yes, and I claim it for all. I claim that willingness to embrace that greater yet to be, to say yes to life, to receive and to surrender. And I give thanks for our willingness to receive and surrender. I give thanks for the manifestation that is happening right here and right now. And so now, on behalf of each person here, I release this word to the perfect working of the perfect law. As my teacher, Reverend Eloise, said, when you speak your word, Ray, you declare that your word has power and it is done because you said so. So I declare that this word is done because I said so. The God in me says so. The God in me accepts it. The God in me is doing the work. And the God in each and every one of us is corresponding and allowing this to outpicture. For there's only one of us here. And for this, I give thanks. I invite you to join me in anchoring this truth by saying the words, and so it is. Amen. Hmm.